You are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
This is Remy Warren.
I am Rihanna Carey.
My name is Adam Foss.
This is Paul Tedford, professional archer.
Hey everyone, I'm Christy Titus, and you are listening to Archery Maniac.
We cover everything archery, from the hunting side to the tournament side, with stories, tips and tactics, gear reviews, and more.
That helped my tuning game so much when I made sure that all my arrows were square.
And I'm just staring into his eyes. Blood's dripping off of its tines. Mud is everywhere.
The clarity these mavens offer is amazing.
I'm just like Spider-Man, you know, on this rock, you know, just laying there.
Belly crawling in there, and I can barely fit in there, and I can hear the cat growling at me.
So I put my hand on his shoulder and pushed him, and we just ran at this elephant.
In this episode, I have a friend of mine, Colton Conrad, on the podcast. Colton and I answered some of the listeners' questions about scouting, broadheads, finding new areas, and silent elk. I hope you enjoy the show.
We had a couple questions come in, most of them related to elk hunting, from a post that I put out. The questions were directed towards Colton and I. So, yeah, Colton, what are a few of these questions?
So, Jordan Budd, out of Wyoming, she asked, how often do you scout the area you plan on hunting in the fall, and how much country are you wanting to cover on those trips? I'm definitely interested in hearing how you guys plan those trips. She gets hung up in one spot a lot. And, yeah, I think we all do, especially me. As I kind of talked about in my elk hunt this year, hanging trail cameras and getting photos of big bulls during the hunting season, I focused on that one bull a little bit too long. You know, when I go scouting, and I think for a lot of people, we save our vacation for the actual hunt. So I'm usually going for a weekend. So I'll plan out my weekends far in advance of areas that I want to hit. And I would say typically when I go on a scouting trip, you know, I'll go in whatever said distance is. And what I look for when I'm going into an area is an area that doesn't have a lot of trails or roads near it. You know, and I'm not saying this is key for all areas. I mean, 2 years ago, I killed my bull 8 miles in. This last year, I killed it a mile in. Okay, so there's overlooked areas that are a mile in. Not all of us need to be going in the 3 to 8 miles, okay? There's a lot of areas that get overlooked that are close. So,
yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, you just got to look for those benches. I mean, for elk, you know, feed. Elk love edges. Elk, you know, like if you got pines, aspens, oak brush and open parks or whatever, they like those edges with feed. So you're just looking for those areas that you think are going to be overlooked. And I like to get up high and glass during the early season. And then when I'm going down into the woods, I'm not looking to see where the elk are now. I'll look to see the caliber of animals as far as elk are concerned. But I'm not looking to see where they are now, because elk are going to move once the rut kicks in. So when I drop down into the trees for elk, I'm looking for rubs and wallows and signs of where they're going to be. Typically what I've learned is where there's rubs and wallows, that's where the elk are going to be usually earlier in the season. I feel like the elk are getting that aggression out on trees, and they're really rubbing them and they're really wallowing.
Cleaning off their velvet too.
Yeah. Like that's what, because there's a difference between that early season rub and that when they've got their cows, because when they have their cows, they're not, I don't think they're spending as much time just rubbing the piss out of a tree.
Yep.
Or, you know, they're just kind of hitting that tree real quick and then chasing their cows. So, I mean, I'll probably cover, just depending on the area and what I'm hunting, I just plan my weekends out to cover, get in, you know, sometimes I'll go in 10 miles, sometimes I'll go in 13 miles, sometimes I'll go in a 1 mile. So it's just depending upon the area and what you're looking at. I probably didn't answer anything, but.
No, yeah, I think, so there's typically two types of hunters out there. So when you're focused, when you're having elk that are not talking and you're in the dark timber, keep in mind there's two type of hunters out there. There's the road hunter that barely, very, very rarely gets 1 mile from the road or more. You know, that very, very rarely will they go past 1 mile. Then there's the hardcore hunter that is going 8+ miles. So there's that small margin in between there that if you're able to focus on that, you can really have a ton of success. And it sounds like, Colton, this past year in 2016, you actually had that success on a much closer hunt than the year you did prior. But when elk are in super dark timber and they're not talking, what I do is I coyote the herd. So I'm up before dark and I am watching where the elk are feeding. I watch where they go into the trees. And as they're slowly feeding into the trees, I am basically stalking them as close as I can be without being completely detected. You know, and then I just slowly keep working in, working in, working in until I start seeing elk within those trees. And I don't cow call. I don't bugle and have a ton of chuckles. I don't do any of that shit. I just sneak in there, silent like a ghost, and find elk, and then I kill elk.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, dude. I mean, that kind of leads into that. Jesse Deckard asked the question, advice on locating silent elk in areas with heavy timber. So you covered what you did, what you do, and I'm kind of similar. The things that I've noticed with elk that are silent is they're not always going to be silent at night. Okay, so one thing that I've done is I'll, in the middle of the night, I'll go hike up on the ridges and I'll rip a bugle and I'll figure out where those elk are now. And you're pretty much guaranteed where they are at night is where they're going to be in the morning. So don't be afraid to wake up in the middle of the night in your skivvies and go out on a ridgeline and rip a bugle and just figure out where those silent elk are and see if anything answers you. And sometimes they won't answer you. And I spent a lot of time this year hunting silent elk, and it is frustrating to say the least. So I guess what I did was set up solo calling sequences and make sure when you set up your solo – and I've made this mistake many times, is I set up a solo calling sequence and I don't think about every option if an elk comes in silent, because they will come in silent as a popcorn fart. Like you won't even know they're there.
So, agreed. And it's crazy. It's eerie as hell because you're just sitting there, you're trying to pay attention, and then you look over and there's an elk there. And you're like, wait a minute. Where the hell did they come from?
Right? And so I guess my advice for people is when you set up the call, no matter if the elk are talking or not, make sure you got your shooting lanes predetermined. When that elk comes in, if you're alone, he's going to hang up if he can see you and he doesn't see a cow. So make sure you set up in an area when he's there, you can shoot. So I'll set up, pick my shooting lanes, pick a good area to call. And I'll set up and I'll cow call and I'll act like a herd that's just milling around in the trees there, not overly aggressively calling. And this year, calling between 30 to 40 minutes before an elk would show up. So I guess that would be some of my advice. I've still hunted some. I've snuck up on elk in their beds, but it is freaking hard. I would say 1 out of 10 times it works.
Yeah, it's a whole different style of hunting. So when you coyote a herd, it's not like you are planning on sneaking in all the way in there and killing the elk. That may happen, like you said, 1 out of 10 times. But what you could focus on is getting in there close. So when they decide to get up and start moving for the day, you're right there already. And that right there is a big freaking deal, because when you're within 70 to 100 yards of them, and they start coming back to feed the exact same direction that they came from, what's going to happen? You're going to kill an elk. That's the way you want it. That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all good stuff. And then Jake Trexler asked, during scouting season, are you cautioning the wind? I think that's a good question to be asked. I do not caution the wind during scouting season. I got kind of a funny story regarding that. So this year, Aaron packed in early, and Frank and I were going to go in together, and Frank had been in the area, and I'm like, dude, you know where you're going to meet Aaron when we go in there. He's like, yeah, I've been in there. I know where I'm going. Man, we got so messed up hiking in there. We were in a band of mini freaking aspen trees trying to hike in there and find his ass, and then we got twisted up and turned around in there, and Frank started yelling Aaron's name. And he was all nervous that, because Aaron's his boss, right? So he's not only his friend, he's his boss. So he's just my friend, so I can give him shit or whatever, but it's also Frank's boss. So he's like all worried that Aaron's going to be pissed. So he's yelling his name. We're hiking up and down. Oh, man, we're hiking across willow trees, branches slapping us in the face. It was a freaking nightmare, dude. I was pissed. I'm like, Frank, I'm freaking camping here. You don't know where the hell we are. I'm camping. Give a shit where Aaron is. I'm freaking camping here. So going back and forth. So the moral of this story after all this, because we had trail cameras for the first time ever, we're getting
and they didn't work with a shit. Well, they took a lot of pictures of trees.
Dude, we had more trail cameras set up than Bass Pro. No joke. I mean, I think we had 6 or 7 or 8. I don't even know, but the trail cameras went from taking some pictures to none for like 2 weeks, dude, after all this commotion. So from the commotion of us yelling and stomping around in the valley that we were in. So I don't know. I don't know if we should be cautioning the wind or not, because there wasn't much activity in that valley after us yelling and stomping around in there during the early season. So shit, man, Jake could be on to something. I don't know. I usually try to stay up high and stay out of where I think the elk are during scouting season.
You know, that's exactly right. The last thing I'm going to do during scouting season is just walk right in where, oh, man, I bet all the elk are right here, bedded down. Let's go blow them out of the country. Like, that's the last thing that I'm going to do. Now, if I'm going to go hang cameras over a wallow or something like that, and the wallow is on the edge of a bunch of black timber, I'm not going to go hang that camera when the wind is blowing directly into that black timber. That's just stupid. That defeats all the purpose of what you're trying to do. So in that aspect, yes, in deer's a little different. Deer, I pay attention a lot more to the wind. I don't know. Deer, it seems like deer are a lot more weary. The elk are where the elk are. The deer are where the people aren't. And if you find a spot where the people aren't and the deer are, you really need to watch your scent in that situation, because if you don't, then the deer will no longer be there.
Yeah. But that being said, once hunting season begins and those elk are rubbed off, when you push an elk, he ain't coming back.
Yep.
But that's a whole different thing. Deer will sometimes come back. The bigger ones like you're talking about, though, if they see a human, once you may get one shot at him, maybe two at a big deer, and then he's gone. You won't see him again. But so yeah, I think we answered the questions that we had, and
we had one other question. It was, I don't remember which guy said it, but he said, we have shot several elk this year and wondering about what type of broadhead setup you use. because we made great shots on the elk, but never found the elk. So I don't remember who said that. And I searched about five or six of the groups, and I just can't find who said it. But
you want me to start with that one, or you want to take her?
Dude, I just switched over to a new broadhead system that I think is gonna be a game changer. So you go ahead, and I will tell about mine when you're done.
All right. So yeah, that's a tough one. We've all when you bow hunt long enough, you're gonna lose an animal. It's gonna happen.
Yep.
People are gonna tell you whatever, blah 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 blah. I've lost animals bow hunting. It happens to all of us. We wanna mitigate it as much as possible, but it's gonna happen, and it sucks bad. So, through trial and error, what I am running, and I'm not saying that this is the holy grail and what you should do,
but I'm saying that.
No, hell no. Please, if you know something better, please tell me.
So, I know something better.
Okay, well, you'll get your chance. So, switched to a three-arrow quiver this year. Yeah, three-arrow quiver. Risky. I carry two fixed blades in it and one expandable. I carry two Whack'em exits. They're like the four-blade. I shot and spent way too much money on broadheads this year. Yeah. My experience. Yeah, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But we all do. I guarantee you, all the people that are listening to this, you're just like us looking at the new boats coming out. Your shit's tuned, everything works, but you want to buy a new boat. Why the hell do we want to do that? They didn't change much this year. We still want to buy a new boat. I don't get it. So, yeah, I tried to fix what wasn't broke this year and went back to what I was using the year before. But, I used two of those Whack'em exits, and I've got the Ramcats to fly really good as well for me and perform really good on animals. And then I keep an expandable, so I'll keep two fixed blades, and I'll shoot those out to 60. After 60, I kind of notice a lot of variables as far as the fixed blades, even those smaller ones for me. So just that. And it's all about confidence. All this stuff on your bow and what you're using is about the confidence you have in it, like anything else in life. So this is why I have confidence in. So I carry that one expandable for a little bit longer shots, and I've the only expandables that I found that I really love are the Almer edges, and they don't make them anymore. So you guys are all screwed because I got like 30 of them.
I had three Omer edges, and I missed all three shots. I never found the arrows.
Yeah, they're like white buffaloes, bro. You can't find them now. All right, so let's hear about what you use.
I just got introduced to the Valkyrie broadhead delivery system. And it is way against what anyone would ever think for broadheads. It's a very long designed broadhead, solid steel. Like, I had a complete pass through and dead centered a rock after the pass through, and all I had to do was sharpen the broadhead and it was good to go again. I mean, they are tough, but it's a whole different concept. It's focusing on extreme front of center rather than, you know, your average 9 to 14%, you're focusing on like 20%. So these broadheads range from, I think it's 200 or 3 or 250 all the way up to 350 grains. Okay. And like I say, it's a whole different mindset, but think of it this way. When you have an arrow that weighs 450 grains with a 100 grain tip, when you hit whatever you're shooting at, your arrow acts almost like a noodle, where it will absorb the energy from your bow, and it will flex and do all this stuff and continue to penetrate to whatever penetration you get. Now, if you're shooting a 450 grain arrow with a 300 grain tip, your arrow, so I'm using a Black Eagle arrow because their spine is allowed to have a lot less grains per inch for my bow and all that jazz.
Their tolerances are tight.
Dude, Black Eagle, it makes some sick arrows, man. So I have a 300 grain broadhead on the front of a Black Eagle shaft, and now it's no longer like your energy is hitting with a wet noodle, because all your energy is stored within your 300 grain broadhead. So it's like the weight is dragging your shaft through the animal or through the target or whatever else, as opposed to when your shaft hits, it starts to flex and do all this other shit and doesn't get as much penetration. So I've shot two animals so far, and the one animal I shot, not that it was super far, it was like 25 yards, but it still went through ribs on the entry, and these broadheads are probably an inch and a half long. It went through the ribs on the entry, out the point of the shoulder, and stuck in a tree literally a whole inch and a half. After going completely through ribs and a whole entire animal, it did that. So that to me is super impressive, because I just pull it out of the tree and I resharpen it and away we go, you know?
Oh, yeah. So I've got a few questions for you on that, because I've got a lot of friends that are shooting the traditional bows. And the thing is they, with the slower speeds of those bows, they're shooting heavier heads. So I would assume if you're shooting that heavy of a head out front of your arrows, that you're using a very heavily spined arrow to compensate for the weight out front.
Yep. Actually, I have one right here. It is, in Black Eagle specs, it is a 250.
And then, so you're probably, your draw length's pretty short, so it's probably cut pretty short, right? So it's pretty stiff setup.
Well, right at the moment, I just actually switched my draw length. I was shooting an equalizer release for a while from Goat Tough, and I am no longer shooting that release, so I am an inch and a half shorter at draw length now than I was. So I actually need to cut my shafts down. So once I get them, you know, cut my shafts down to where they need to be, it will be like you say, a stiff setup.
Nice.
But I also shoot 80-pound Bowtech. I guess I didn't mention that.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the trad guys are doing that, so I don't know why the compound, they're having heck of a success, accuracy, being able to take down animals with. So yeah, I think that answered everybody's questions that I know of.
Yep.
Thank you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously though, I really appreciate your ear, and it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, 1-star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lambers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.